Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are on season one, episode three of The Crown, called Windsor.
Yeah, this is so interesting how we start to get a lot of the backstory of the family. And I think this is going to be really very fun to look into. Of course, you know, you got to wonder how much of this is true, how much we are just guessing.
You never know.
As you never know. And of course, we were just discussing the fact that we both watched season five of The Crown, and I am hoping that my opinions on that don't creep into this, and so we need to talk about our disclaimers.
Yeah, we will be cursing and we will be spoiling The Crown. We will hopefully not be spoiling too much, because a lot of this is rooted in historical fact, at least the events are, not necessarily what happened, actually, like the discussions and like dialogue and such, but like the actual historical events. I mean, that, sorry to spoil.
I mean, the abdication happened. So
yeah, that happened already. That was years ago. You should have known about this.
Right. So yeah, I mean, things like that definitely happened. We are also going to be cursing. Did you say cursing? I thought you
I
just
did say cursing.
About it. Oh, I'm sorry. And I at least am having a beverage. What are you drinking?
I am drinking lemon lime Gatorade because it was in my fridge.
Because you need to be hydrated so that we can talk about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, am having mulled wine. This is an experiment based on a self-made sangria recipe that your dad had. It has Rioja wine, orange juice, and Fireball in a cinnamon stick, and it's quite tasty. I'm rather pleased with it. So I expect this is going to be a warming beverage for this chilly, rainy, icky day that we've got.
Yeah. So do you want to go ahead and get into it?
Let's do it. So this episode starts with a flashback
to 1936.
To 1936, before Elizabeth and Margaret were really, I mean, they were princesses, but they were very young. They're on bicycles, they're climbing trees.
And annoying their nanny.
Annoying their nanny, hiding from her. And they're very cute. They're adorable. Oh my gosh.
Oh, they're well casted, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And beautifully directed, because you know, directing kids has got to be hard. And you know, beautifully dressed. Yeah, they did. Beautifully dressed, very similar to like the pictures you've seen of the young Queen Elizabeth when she was very young. And this is being intercut with the abdication.
Well, the abdication has already happened, but the Duke of Windsor wants to make a speech about why he abdicated. And Queen Mary, his mother, does not want him to make a speech. She just wants him to go quietly and just leave.
Because she's livid with him. She is furious with him.
I would be too.
Me too.
Ungrateful son of a bitch. I'm sorry, but that I'm sorry that that's just my opinion. Like, really? Like, you knew what you were getting into, whether you wanted to or not. That's what you're getting into. And the reason that you're not going to be the king is because you want to marry a divorcee.
Yeah,
of like twice, exactly. Or actually three times.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wallace Simpson had gotten around some, shall we say, before she
No like shade against getting divorced or anything like that. But like, there is a reason why that was scandalous back then, and right. How it, and why that wouldn't jive with cabinet or anything like that. So.
Well, or with being the head of the church, which is part of the job as well. I mean, you know, thank Henry VIII for that, but that's a thing. Now,
yeah,
of course,
we're not going to thank Henry VIII for a lot.
Yeah, he's not an icon of non-scandalous behavior.
He's certainly a polygamist. So
yeah, exactly. So that's not really like the end of the world, you know, from his perspective. And of course, you know, you could always just kill them off as being treacherous.
Yeah. Wallace doesn't want that. So
no. I mean, I'm not going to devolve into the musical six here, although we don't have to, but it's fun. But yeah, Queen Mary, like, she's very, very upset about it. But the speech itself, in the end, he declares his allegiance to George VI. brother.
And you see Elizabeth and Margaret being ushered back into the palace, and they go into a little room with her father and mother, and they're listening to the radio, and they're listening to the speech, and you see the king twisting his ring. It's a nervous tic of his, and you see that in a minute with Elizabeth, which I thought was a nice touch.
But I didn't even notice that. That's great.
We'll get there. But you see him having a nervous tic with the ring, and Elizabeth is just watching him very carefully. Like, she knows this is going to change a lot in her life, and he knows that it's going to change a lot in her life as well. Not just his, but hers. She's next. So and that's an interesting dynamic that I'm glad is a little bit explored later on. But they're listening to it, and that's basically the end of that flashback. And then we go over to Philip.
I wanted to mention one thing. You know, you talk about the performances. Jared Harris, again, doesn't even have a word in this scene.
He doesn't need it.
Right, but he expresses that anxiety, and the young actress playing Elizabeth, she sees it. You know, like, you see her watching her father, and she kind of swallows. Because she knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though no one's explained it to her, you know, overtly, she knows that this means a big change in her life too. And she's far more sensitive to the room. Like, you know, you don't see anybody else being as thoughtful or observant. And I think that is something that I really like about these performances for the young Elizabeth and going forward with her, at least, you know, in these earlier seasons.
Because we do see it again. We do. So then we go over to Philip, who's renovating.
They're in bed. They start out in bed.
Renovating Clarence's house for the family. And then you see, and Elizabeth is going to the palace, and you notice that she's twisting her wedding ring like her father did in the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a busy schedule, and according to Tommy Lassels, it will settle down once the palace is her main residence and not Clarence's house.
Well, right. Part of her anxiety is that she knows that Philip doesn't want that. And she doesn't really want it either. Buckingham Palace apparently is very large.
I can imagine it's similar to like living in a museum. So I don't blame her.
Yeah.
It's not very cozy.
No, but at the same time, she doesn't know how to address that. And this is not something she wants to discuss with the staff. This is something she needs to discuss with the people in power, the people who pay, you know, all of those things.
Mm.
So she's got this very tight schedule. She doesn't get like any time. Like, you have 20 minutes to discuss the funeral arrangements, and then you have 20 minutes to do this, and you have 20 minutes, and everything. And you get this sense, like, everything that the queen does, you get 20 minutes and that's it. 20 minutes and we move to the next thing. And you know, everybody gets just that amount of time, and they're moved along. Everybody has to be moved along because there's so much to do.
Queen Mary and the Queen Mother are making the funeral arrangements, and they want to figure out where to put the Duke of Windsor. And she doesn't, and the Queen doesn't want him, the Queen Mother does not want him behind her, breathing down her neck. And so they're like, oh, let's put him near Winston. And the Queen Mother tells Elizabeth that the Duke of Windsor and his wife have nicknames for everybody. And Crybaby is Winston's, and Shirley Temple is Elizabeth's.
Right. And that comes up over and over again. It's really, really very interesting. Mm-hmm. So then they've got, and I don't know why this is, but the Duke of Windsor is arriving in London. And it's kind of like, it just reminds me of you know, those routines of like, all these people come out and they're waving at the ship. I'm going to get dressed up and put on a hat.
Dressed up, including hats, and wave at the. No, I don't know anyone on the boat.
And no, I don't know why. No one has anything to do during the day other than stand around and say, hey, this ship is arriving.
Oh, God, it's the old times. We're just going to have to sit around and just be in the old times.
Oh, John Mulaney, we love you. But yeah. So, there are people waving at the ship, and he gives a little speech like, I'm so happy to be here. And you even get the sense there's such an undercurrent of sarcasm in the performances of all of the actors that play the Duke of Windsor in this series. And it's really kind of cool to watch how they are able to have that, you know, play within a play thing going on almost.
I mean, he's like, about to become my Claudius, so.
Yeah, well, Derek Jackie is always going to be a favorite of mine just because he's Derek Jackie. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame he plays the Duke of Windsor, but he's just such a sweet old man. I don't know.
Don't worry, we're not going to hold it against him, I promise. So then
I only think of him as the father in Cinderella, so, or the king in Cinderella, so.
It's so sweet. But yeah, he goes very first to see Queen Mary, and it's the first person, and it is super fucking awkward. Yeah. And so she talks about, you know, look, Bertie, George, the king, was the perfect son, and you killed him by putting him in this position. You
favoritism.
Yeah, just a bit, but
kind of warranted favoritism, to be fair.
It is under these circumstances. And she warns the Duke, not to mention Wallace Simpson, not talk about her.
We don't talk about Wallace.
No, we don't. We don't talk about Wallace.
Exactly. You knew what I was talking about.
I know what you're talking about. But then you cut to Elizabeth and she's starting her duties, and you know, the very first
the box.
Right, she goes through the box, but the box is still marked the king because they haven't had time to change it. They haven't, you know, there's still the work to do.
Funeral hasn't even happened yet. This is pretty early days.
Well, right, but she, you know, there's the work is still, you know, it doesn't ever stop. Mm-hmm. Like nothing stops for her to process anything. She's got to go straight to work.
And then Winston.
Well, Tommy goes over the box with her too, and you know, it's interesting that he knows enough about the contents or how they should be processed.
Who do you assume puts it in there?
It's sent over from the Prime Minister's office.
Yeah, and he's probably had to be next to the king while he does that stuff. Or
we had not really seen that before because King George, you know, we had seen him alone with the box and showing Elizabeth.
Well, at that point, he knows how to work it, but.
Right. But Tommy, and you really see this and you see how essentially it is because he's the institutional knowledge, right? Yeah. He's the bridge.
There's a reason why Bertie couldn't be part of.
He's not, sorry. Bertie.
Martin couldn't be the new secretary because he doesn't have the same know-how as Tommy Lascelles does. Right. But then we go to Philip, who notices that Winston has arrived and
at Clarence's house.
And he's like, it'll take him an hour to get to the front door and then another hour to get through the bloody thing.
right. And it's sad. But then Philip, he's like, I've got two things you've got to mention to him. I want the kids to have my last name. I want them to be Mountbatten. And I want it to be clear that we're staying at Clarence's house. Because, you know, they've just invested like all this money into like redecorating and he's been in charge of that. So Churchill gets there and the protocol, he actually has to explain it to Elizabeth.
Well, really quickly, there's a cute moment with Charles for a second. Once Philip explains that to Elizabeth, she's like, okay, fine, whatever. I'll mention it. And then she leaves and then he's just kind of standing there and then you hear a honk behind him and then he turns around and it's Charles in a little car, like just, it's really cute. And there are a lot of cute moments between Philip and the kids in these few episodes. But then apparently the sovereign never offers a chair or refreshment to the prime minister. Elizabeth does both. And he's just like, nothing too important can be solved within 20 minutes.
Right. There's nothing that is so important that can't be solved in 20 minutes. And we stand for the whole thing. And I'm going to deliver my little whatever, even though he like can barely stand at this point.
Just accept the chair, Winston. You can still talk, but
right. And he points out these were Victoria's rules, and he knows that. And so that they talk about. They cut to, I guess, Philip's talking to Lord Mountbatten, who was who kind of adopted Philip.
I think his uncle.
Yes. He's related to Elizabeth as well. I think he's Elizabeth's uncle, but he adopted Philip because Philip's parents died.
And it's a whole thing.
We'll explore it later. But Churchill also, and you know, he's like, I want you know, our name to be the ruler name. Lord Mountbatten says this to Philip. We cut back to Churchill, and Churchill's kind of like, hey, let's have the coronation in 16 months.
Oh, okay. So basically Elizabeth is like, I want to have my coronation in the summer. And he's like, okay, next summer. But she's like, but that doesn't make any sense. My father had 5 months. I'm getting 16. My father had a similar situation where it was kind of a sudden thing. And he was given 5 months to prepare and stuff like that for that. But I have 16. That makes absolutely no sense. And so then the five audience is basically over. And she barely got a word in. She's really confused about the delay, and she's upset. Kind of upset by it. And Philip's upset that she didn't get to mention the points, but it's not really her fault. She didn't have any time to talk about that. And so she leaves to go to the palace. And then you see the Duke visiting Margaret, Elizabeth, and the Queen Mother, which is very awkward. And Elizabeth admits that she is willing to meet with the Duke after the funeral for lunch or a walk or whatever, and before he goes back to New York, which is where him and Peaches or whatever the fuck her name is, Wallace, live. And
there were two things after that meeting, immediately after, where the Duke walks out and he says, I guess to whoever's in the hallway, in this family, you can't be sure if you're in, but when you're out, you're out. And he knows he's getting a cold shoulder. He knows that they're just, especially the Queen Mother. But the Queen Mother warns Elizabeth. She's like, don't be fooled by him.
He's just power hungry, and he's going to drain every last drop.
Right. And she says it, but like Elizabeth, we are newbies to this royal environment. And so we're not really sure if that's warranted. You know that she's grown up with some of these prejudices. And I think she probably, because her mom's not been super supportive of her, she's kind of thinking, well, maybe mom's overreacting. And I think like every kid feels like, oh, maybe mom's overreacting kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But we as the public hear the Duke of Windsor writing a letter. And it's the voiceover, the narration over things going on. And so the Duke of Windsor is writing this letter to Wallace Simpson. And it shows, this is very striking to me because we just saw it with the Queen's stuff, is that the body of her father is lying in state at Westminster Palace at the Halls of Parliament. And where he's lying in state, and we just saw people filing. We saw, the children standing guard around the coffin, and then we saw the grandchildren standing guard. It was really remarkable to see that, just the respect, people filing through and paying their respects to the king in this instance, but also to the queen just recently. And in the letter, you hear David, Duke of Windsor, talking about how dumpy and plain the Queen Mother is.
He also calls the Queen Mother cookie.
Yeah. Well, because she looks like a cook. She's just dumpy and plain.
And he basically wants to stay on side and keep his foot in the door so that they get a bigger allowance because his wife wasn't. And he's like, I'm going to drain every last drop I can because you weren't invited to the funeral. Why you'd want to go to your husband's brother's funeral, who he basically drove to the grave? I don't know.
You should want to pay your respects if you're a decent. Well,
absolutely. Like, you want to pay respects, but like the fact that the reasoning that he gives is you weren't invited to the funeral. I'm going to drain every last, like,
there's so much petty backstabbing bullshit going on in this family. It's like, it's sickening. It is sickening.
And then after the funeral, you see Lord Mountbatten shooting with, Hanover. I don't know what his title is. I think it's Prince. Right. I don't know.
Right. But, so, just to give some context to the Hanover, and we get a little bit of this They are royal family of Germany. They are related to, rather obviously,
Queen Mary.
And so, you know, he makes Lord Mountbatten makes a toast to, like, we're going to have the royal house Mountbatten. He's like, you know, certain that it's going to happen. And the Duke, Prince, whatever, the Hanoverian guy, is kind of like, this is not right. And I need to tell somebody.
Yeah. And then we go over to Philip, who's playing football with Charles, and he's trying to get Charles to kick the ball, but he won't. He's too hesitant. And then Philip's friend, who I don't know the name of and don't care, comes over.
It'll come up later.
It will. I know. It doesn't matter. Right. But Philip gets distracted by a plane, and he mentions he always wanted to join the Air Force. And then with the help, encouragement of Philip's friend, Charles hits the ball and hits Philip in the shoulder.
And, but Philip's like staring at a plane during this. He's not paying any attention at all.
I said that. But then Philip's really proud, and then he picks him up, and they're having fun. And then he sees Elizabeth looking down on them from the window, and they kind of exchange cute looks, and it's cute.
She's opening the box, and it now says the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can see that time has passed. So then you've got,
she flips the papers over like her father did. And then the Queen Mother apparently has stopped the allowance and delivered the news through Tommy Lascelles to the Duke, who is complaining now to Queen Mary.
She mentions
in the earlier thing when she's talking to Margaret and Elizabeth that she's like, well, he won't know what hit him. And I'm like, oh, what are you gonna do? And then she just cuts off the allowance. I'm like, ooh, bitch, nice.
Yeah.
Then
David wants to bitch about it.
Yeah. And Queen Mary does not care. But then Hanover, and he's just like, oh, we're barely making ends meet with the allowance we have. And it's like, you live in splendor. And then he's like, well, yeah, but.
And you do nothing. You do fucking nothing other than spend money. But yeah. And they talk about the extended royal family. The Hanoverian guy comes in to talk to Queen Mary, and Dave is still there, the Duke when they're still there. And they talk about how the name, and there's a German exchange between Queen Mary and the Hanoverian guy, which kind of lets us know that that relationship is there. And they talk about the name, the Mountbatten name, and they're starting to be catty about Prince Philip being, or yeah, he's prince now, I guess, being the foundling.
He's not prince yet.
No, he will be soon.
Eventually.
Philip.
And then there's this whole thing about it was brought up in a toast about the Mountbatten being the name of the royal family now. And then she's just like, a toast of what? And he's like, champagne. And then she's like, you were drinking champagne the day after my son's funeral. I'm like, okay. It's not, yeah, the day.
She is very Victorian. Yeah, I mean, she's extreme. You went shooting the day after my son's funeral's, like, we get together very rarely. Come on, we gotta do something.
And then Margaret visits Peter, and he got a letter that his wife has left him, no divorce yet.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. So one other thing is that Queen Mary is pissed, and she's like, there was a what they call the 1917 warrant that established the name of the royal family as Windsor. And while it's not clear about, you know, the female members of the family, like if they marry or whatever, the family name, the royal name is Windsor. And you can see her like already calculating, how am I gonna fix this? How am I gonna make sure that it stays Windsor? And Dave's like, yeah, Windsor, I'm a Windsor. So anyway, I'm sorry. So yes, Margaret goes to see Peter, and Peter's wife is leaving.
And she's just like, I'm sorry. And then he's like, no, you're not. And she's like, no, I'm not. And then he can't sue for divorce, otherwise he'd lose his job. But Margaret's like, oh, don't worry about that. I'll make sure you keep your job. And he would be free or whatever. you still have children, dude, but fine. And then Philip goes to Peter's office. Margaret has to hide, but leaves her clutch on the desk. Peter will teach Philip how to fly because Peter was in the Air Force. It was mentioned earlier. And then it's revealed that Philip's pregnant sister died in a plane during a storm and went into labor mid-flight. And the baby boy was found next to her in the wreckage, dead along with her. Anyway, right.
mentions it that was his favorite sister. Of course, this, you know, I think it's going to come up again. It's definitely going to come up again in the series. One of the things that came away from this between Peter and Margaret is that Margaret wants to marry Peter. She's like, you know, she makes that very, very clear. And so they cut to the Queen Mary, the Queen Mother, and Tommy.
Oh, really quickly, Philip notices the clutch and asks if it's anyone they knew. And Peter's like, no. And then they move on to whatever.
So the Queen Mary, the Queen Mother, and Tommy are discussing getting to the Prime Minister and doing some of this Mountbatten business. And so they find, and actually it's David that approaches Churchill. And it's clear that they are good friends. And Churchill points out, like, hey, Philip's real name is this lengthy German, whatever it is, his real last name. You know, Mountbatten is just, you know, the name.
We're not at the point where David's talking to him yet. He's talking to Elizabeth.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he's basically like,
oh, Elizabeth mentions it. Okay, so yeah, she brings up a few things.
Don't change the name. And she basically is like, yes, I'm a queen, but I'm also a woman and a wife. And in order to maintain stability within her marriage, Philip's pride is a large part of it. And a pride in one's name being passed on through the family is a big part of that as well. And to deny him that is another thing that they're denying him just because she's the queen and she doesn't want him to have his ego bruised anymore. And Winston is going to ask Cabinet, but she's like, no, you're going to inform Cabinet that this is not going to happen. And she stands up for herself and for her family. So good for her.
Okay. And she also says, you know, we're going to live in Clarence House. And of course, so she's like, I put my marker down. She tells Philip, and Philip's like, yeah, great. Awesome. Then we've got David meeting with Churchill, and already after Churchill has like given stuff to the cabinet. I'm sorry.
There's actually another moment where she mentions that she knows about Anthony Eden going to her father. And she also knows that no one's going to bring up resignation while he's planning a coronation. And that's why there's the delay in the coronation thing. And
it's a power move.
And she's like, but I will allow the delay if you support my position in cabinet with the whole Clarence House thing and the surname thing. If you support me in cabinet, I'll allow the delay. And so that's why she's allowing that and all that stuff. Duke goes to Winston and is booed by the crowd, which is funny to me.
Yeah, it is funny. And the cabinet has rejected Elizabeth's thing about the name. And
you knew that was going to happen anyway. Yeah. So whatever.
But this conversation between David and Winston Churchill is interesting because it's like, again, I'm sure this is speculative, but like, no one should be punished for love. I've gone to bat with you over and over again. You shouldn't come begging to me. And he's like, I'll go to bat for your allowance to get your allowance reinstated. And then, you know, David wants a title for Wallace, and that is the bridge too far.
Yeah.
That's
like, really far.
No, she's not going to get a fucking title. Get over yourself.
But he wants him to also put in a good word to Elizabeth about his allowance. And then the Duke writes to his wife again while a dance between the two is shown. And then you see
it's
Margaret.
Tango. It's a tango. It's very like.
I don't know if it's a tango, but it's. Then you see also have a montage of basically those two, Margaret and Peter, kissing briefly.
Yeah. Margaret's got this lovely frothy dress on. She looks beautiful.
And then you also see Philip and Elizabeth at the ballet. She also has a beautiful dress as well. And Philip is like comforting Elizabeth because she looks a bit uncomfortable. And then you have the Duke visiting Elizabeth, and she mentions the nicknames. And
right, she confronts it. And this is one of those things that I like about this characterization of her, whether it's accurate or not, is that she's just like, hey, I know you've been calling me this. It's not very nice. Stop it, more or less. Not that it's going to stop him, because he is a catty, petty son of a bitch. And I'm very unimpressed, you know, based on the characterization that we have here of him. And I think some of that, and you know, I think that some of that is based on letters that of his that were published posthumously. You know, he is like this catty, petty son of a bitch, basically.
I'm not surprised. But then there's also this little dialogue part that she's like, well, I intend to do it well. And he's like, I did too. And then she's like, obviously not hard enough. And good then, for her. Yeah. And then she mentions that the Duke never apologized to Elizabeth for putting her in that difficult place. And she would have had a simpler and happier life if she wasn't thrust into the public eye like she was. She was going to be in the public eye because she is a part of the royal family, but she wouldn't be the heir to the throne if he hadn't abdicated.
Right. Right. And so she's like, I would take, you know, I deserve your apology. And then she's like, I would take advice since my father is gone. And he's not here to give me any. She acts like she thinks he actually cares for her. And then you know, David's like, hey, the surname business, because he took it upon himself. Like, look, you know, you really can't go with Mountbatten. You gotta go with Windsor. I'm a Windsor. Everybody's a Windsor. Windsor, Windsor. And then Philip comes home and he says, hey, you know, he's like rattling on about, hey, I want to take flying lessons from Peter. I found a teacher, blah, blah, blah. And then Elizabeth's like, I got to talk to you. The cabinet doesn't want Mountbatten. We're going to have to give up Clarence House. Like the two things he actually cared about.
Yeah.
And you can see that he is angry. His reaction is anger. Is, you know, he's upset generally, but his reaction is anger. And he's like, you know.
He basically says, you've taken my career, my home, my name, and I thought we were in this together. Yeah. And she's just like, we're going to, and then that scene ends and they move to the palace. The Duke goes back to New York and Elizabeth announces the name to cabinet. And it's like, all of my descendants will be named Windsor.
Right. So what was your best part of this episode?
Best parts and worst parts are getting harder with these episodes because everybody's kind of on edge a little bit, but that's just kind of part of being a part of a monarchy and being in the royal family. There's going to be a lot of people on edge. But I think Elizabeth standing up for herself was a good part for me, even though it didn't really standing up for herself in both senses when she first does it to Winston and then does it to Philip. Because I think that she needed that moment to be like, okay, well, everybody, like people were ordering her around to do this kind of thing. And she did ask for the advice and all that stuff. But I think that her putting her foot down is like, this is how things are. This is how it's going to be. I'm not going to break tradition now. How would that look? Also, we just got it.
Right. And I think that, you know, this is, you know, this whole transitional period, a lot of what is explored in season one and season two, really, this whole getting accustomed to being a public person, a person for whom duty is more important than self, is really very difficult. And I love the way they explore that. I love the way they personify that. Whether any of it's accurate or not is questionable, but you know, I do think these are legitimate questions that they're trying to answer. With you know, how would this play out? You know, how would Philip take this reasonably as a guy who had this military career, who had you know all of this ability? How would he take you know, like you don't have a job? Oh, your name. Pshaw, you know, just you don't get to live in this house you've worked in. You don't get any of the things that you have worked for. And, you know, as a society, we expect like you earn things, right? Mm-hmm. So I really like the way that they've done that. My best part for this episode was acting. I felt like the performances across the board were really well done. Mm-hmm. I don't have a standout specific thing because I think that this is one of those real life transitions that's hard.
Yeah.
So that was my best thing. What's your worst part?
The Duke. And Philip getting upset, like as upset as he does. Like, I get it, dude, but I mean, obviously, well, maybe, okay, I don't get it, but like, I've not been in this position. I'm not a guy. I wasn't a guy in the 50s. I don't know what's going on there, but like, him getting that upset at Elizabeth, even though she did try, is kind of annoying because it's like, how much more can she fight this? Like, cabinet said no. What can she do? Is she going to just vote of no confidence shit? Like, I don't know what she's supposed to do in this situation in Philip's mind, what else she can do. She stood up for it. She did all that, whatever. And also Peter and Margaret, because it's still a weird relationship that I don't really like. So what about your worst part?
My worst part is David being a conniving liar and getting away with it. Mm. Yeah, that really, because I think that part of what bothers me, and it is such a common thing that you see happen, Elizabeth wants to see good in him. She wants him to be a better person than he actually is. Her mother knows what he is. Her grandmother for sure knows what he is. And she wants to make her own decisions, you know, have him basically betray her, not just them, or, you know, not just her father, which I understand that as a person, we all want to make our own independent decisions, but at the same time, he's a complete motherfucker. He is somebody who just doesn't deserve trust, and he really doesn't. And that, of course, becomes clearer and clearer as things progress. I didn't write down anything else as a worst part. I kind of disagree with you about Philip. And
again, I mentioned I don't understand the mindset because obviously not even the same century. I'm not a guy. I don't have kids. I don't have that pressure of like wanting to build a legacy for myself. And I'm definitely not in the Navy. So, and I'm not a masculine person. So I don't know, like, I think the thing is just like, what more does he want her to do? She tried, and he was grateful that she tried, but she, just because she didn't succeed, it's not necessarily her fault that she didn't succeed. That's not, it wasn't her decision, final decision. She tried to sway as much as she could, but she can't, so.
Well, and I think that all of those fair comment, particularly in the context of 2022. I'm not a guy in 1950 either. But when you work for something and you feel like you've given up and given up and given up.
No, I get that. And I think that's probably going to be taken out of my worst part because honestly, I think I just don't like it when they fight. I think it just, because I just love them so much. And I really, really love the chemistry. But, and whenever they're mad at each other, it makes me sad.
But I think even Elizabeth points this out when she's defending her marriage. She's like, look, I love this man for specific reasons.
He's always stood by me.
Right. I mean, he is, you know, like a testosterone guy. He's a guy. And he's a man's man. And he is. Yeah. You know, here's somebody who like faced a charging bull elephant, you know, that kind of thing. There's no question that he would give his life for her. Right. And she knows that. And she wants these emblems of respect for him. And she doesn't know how to negotiate that in the context of what she has. And I feel, this constitutional monarchy, the politics, and I know you hate the politics exist. And I don't know.
I'm aware they exist. I just don't care.
Right. But I mean, that.
Okay. That made me sound like an anarchist. I'm not, it's just like, it doesn't make for fun television for me.
It does not make for fun television. Other than you have to acknowledge that these varying demands exist for her, some of which are, you know, like ancient, some of which are less ancient. I'm sorry, 1917, you know, compared to when she was born, 1926, that's not that ancient. You know, that's less than 10 years. And so the 1917 decree that said everyone's going to be named Windsor and doesn't include females, it's like, you can say whatever the fuck you want about that, really.
They weren't expecting another female monarch, I guess, and they didn't think that far ahead.
Which is pretty stupid coming from the offspring of Queen Victoria, but whatever. Okay.
And Queen Elizabeth I. And
yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, that was short-sighted and stupid. And maybe intentional, like, hey, you know, they'll deal with it later. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, we do it again when she's telling cabinet, oh yeah, and any of my offspring that are female will be Windsor until they take the name of their husband or whatever. So they still kept that in. And I guess it's going to be their decision whether or not if they become an heir to the throne, that's going to be their prerogative of whatever if they're going to fight it or not, which they'll probably lose anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I don't know. They still didn't fix that part of it in
her decree. But they didn't fix that part of it, but they fixed, and I find this interesting, when William and Kate were going to have their first child, George.
Mm-hmm. How old is George now?
Gosh, is he like 11? I don't know.
Let me look it up.
Okay.
It's going to make me feel old because I remember when he was born.
But when they did not publish, if they knew, the sex before he was born. And I think she set out something saying whether male or female.
This is the line. Okay, that makes me feel better about myself.
But you know, whether male or female, this child, who is the child of the person who is in line for the throne, will take the throne. Whether, you know, and so it ended up that George was male, but then, you know, Charlotte, that puts Charlotte in line. So, you know, should something happen to George or whatever. And so that, I think, was a good modernist type change for the Queen to embrace. And I'm glad that they've done that, at least, like, whatever the first child is, we don't care about the gender. And that it gets rid of, like, the awkward weirdness that kind of created Elizabeth the First. It was, you know, so I think that's a good thing. How did you grade this episode?
I gave it a B+. I think that it's good. It's not as good as the ones that we've done already. I think it's just because I couldn't really grab onto a particular part. It was hard to find a best part. So I think that kind of constitutes, like, well, maybe it wasn't as good of an episode as the other ones. So, yeah, that's
what I had it as A-B+. I still feel like, you know, the overall quality and performance is really good, but I felt like, you know, the story and you know, again, it's reality. Like, you know, this period is muddled, and I gather they're probably speculating on a lot of why these things went the way that they did, but you know there's got to have been some debate in cabinet that's recorded somewhere that Elizabeth wanted Mountbatten, that Elizabeth wanted to live in Clarence House, that, you know, that she did make that effort. And so those historical things, I think, are you know, represented here. But, you know, the whys behind it, the conversations that occurred, you know, we're never going to know exactly. So I felt, you know, yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's not like the best episode in this season for sure. And certainly not the best episode overall of any of the seasons of The Crown.
Yeah.
So we are going to be rolling right along with The Crown season 4. Season 4.
We skipped 3 seasons and we are going to move on to season 4.
It's really good mulled wine. I'm just pointing this out. So
I'm sure it is. In case
you were wondering, it was most excellent. And so we will be, the next one is called Act of God.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be proceeding to that episode next. And we hope that you tune in and that you watch The Crown so that we have an actual discussion about it. And
cheers.